You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today, we'll be going to the archives to hear Hugh Lynn Cayce on prophecy. Hugh Lynn Cayce served his father's Association for Research and Enlightenment, the ARE, as chairman of the board before his death. He was also author of the book Venture Inward, an examination of safe and unsafe methods of exploring personal psychic experiences and the outer limits of Edgar Cayce's power, which explores the relatively small number, 200, of readings that appeared to be inaccurate. We'll start off with an introduction by Thomas Sugrue.
Now, it's not my job so much to tell you about this man, because I want you and Cayce to tell you, and also to tell you about his prophecy. I only want to say that the man, as an American, was put to the kind of test that we Americans think everything should be put to. That is practicality. We call it pragmatism. So for 25 years before this man, Edgar Cayce, ever gave anything out of his clairvoyant powers about either prophecy or philosophy or religion or anything, for 25 years he was tested in the good old American way. He gave help to people who were sick by diagnosing what was wrong with them and telling them what the doctors ought to do to help them. He didn't lay his hands on them or anything of the sort. He merely offered that most precious of all medical secret diagnosis to clairvoyance. And at this point, I'm going to let the speaking be done about this man whom I want Hugh Lynn Cayce to tell you about before he tells you the answer that he got and that I got and that others got when we said to this man, asking these questions, what about the prophecy? And what about the future of America? And what about the 20th century? Those answers more or less clarify and substantiate what I have been telling you. But they do so in a way which will be interesting to you, because they give details about what's going to happen not only to the world and not only to the destiny of the United States and the people, but even to the very land on which this building is sitting. And I now will introduce to you this other half of this lecture, Mr. Hugh Lynn Cayce.
I was listening to Tom describe Joseph Smith's experience in Nauvoo. I was reminded of a reading which I heard given by Edgar Cayce in Dayton, Ohio. This was before we moved to Virginia Beach, Virginia. And at that time, the family was considering this move. Plans were being laid for the building of a hospital at Virginia Beach. And men who were to back this hospital came to Dayton and asked for readings about Virginia Beach. Now, my father had never been to Virginia Beach. We had an aunt by marriage who had been there once, many years before, and that's about as close as we had ever come to it. The backers of the hospital were very practical men, and they wanted some specific answers. They asked specifically where they should purchase the property on which the hospital was to be built, how soon it should be built, and other details about it. A reading was given, and in this reading, not only appeared some very interesting clairvoyant statements about Virginia Beach, but also a certain amount of prophecy, which we have watched work out, and which is still working out down on the coast there, about 18 miles from Norfolk. This is exactly what was given. Edgar Cayce indicated in this reading that two points might be selected for the hospital. The first choice was 3 blocks back from the Atlantic Ocean at what was then the city limits, the northern city limits of Virginia Beach, because, he said, of the practical value of this property, as this was to become the center of activity, that the largest amount of building, the larger areas of building, would take place, actually, between what was the present center of activity and 50th Street, or what would become 50th Street. But that the hospital should be built 3 blocks back from the Atlantic Ocean at the boundary, the present city limits, that this would be the very center of Virginia Beach. Or that they might go north and build in the foothills between Virginia Beach and Cape Henry on the sand dunes. When I remember, he was lying on a couch in a so-called hypnotic or trance state in Dayton, Ohio. He was talking before 4 or 5 people, none of whom had ever been in Virginia Beach. They knew nothing about the present city limits. They knew nothing about the building areas and so forth. We went to Virginia Beach, and I was there even before my father was, because he went to New York and I met him in Virginia Beach. I remember the time very well. The only straw hat I ever owned, I wore to Virginia Beach that a very hot day. We went down there, and we found some very interesting, later as time moved along, we found some very interesting situations. The readings looked absolutely cockeyed, absolutely untrue. Because the center of Virginia Beach at that moment was at what was called 17th Street. It was true that the northern boundary was at 25th Street. And that was all the streets there were. The rest of them up above weren't named, didn't have much identification on them, and looked like a wilderness up that way. But below 17th Street, to the south of Virginia Beach, 4 enormous hotels were being constructed, and 2 large subdivisions were opening up, all at the south end. And we arrived in the middle of a little boom, and everybody was buying property, and the real estate people said, "Why, you're foolish. Virginia Beach is going to grow southward. And the real area of development are down here in these beautiful lake regions and down in the pines and so forth. You ought to be down that end." They investigated at 25th Street, the then boundary of Virginia Beach, and found that the lots had all been divided up and they couldn't get a large enough area. And they went north to the second choice and bought several blocks of property on which a few years later the hospital was built. 3 blocks back from the Atlantic Ocean on 25th Street, a brother-in-law of mine who is a doctor and who thinks that the education records are the work of, he doesn't believe in the devil, but some reasonable facsimile, who doesn't agree at all, is very interested, not at all interested in this thing. He with 3 other doctors built what is now the Virginia Beach Hospital without any knowledge on the exact spot that the readings indicated a hospital should be built. Now, in the south end, you just want to know, and see, can see the question in some of your eyes, what happened to those big hotels down there at the south end? Well, at the moment, they're about to wash away. They have all been sold or been bankrupted 2 or 3 times. The subdivisions never did sell at all, and the entire movement of Virginia Beach and its building, which is tremendous, has all gone northward and lies now, the real area of development, as those of you who've been down there know, lies in the area around the Cavalier and around the big new apartment buildings and around all the activity there. between 26th Street and 50th. Now, there's a bit of prophecy, and there's also perhaps clairvoyance, and there's also a mixture there of telepathy. Tom has given you a beautiful survey of the great world prophecies. I want, in just a few moments, to try here to relate the work of Edgar Cayce to these prophecies. But to do this successfully, I think it would be wise, because many of you may have only heard of this man, for me to give you a thumbnail sketch of Edgar Cayce's work and just how his prophecies fit into his entire psychic activity.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Cayce on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Hugh Lynn Cayce.
For me to give you a thumbnail sketch of Edgar Cayce's work and just how his prophecies fit into his entire psychic activity. Now I'm going to do this at a different tempo, a little faster, and you will have an opportunity a bit later to ask questions. So if I skip over or miss any particular point that you want to ask a question about, don't hesitate to do so. Edgar Cayce was born in Kentucky. He had a vision, a strange kind of vision as a child, which to him was a religious experience, a promise that he might be able to help people. Later, as a child, he used this promise in learning his lessons, and he did so very rapidly and in a very strange fashion that really scared some of his teachers. Tom has told this story beautifully in There is a River, the story of Edgar Cayce, known to literally thousands of people throughout this country. Edgar Cayce continued, and later, early in life, he developed a very serious ailment, a throat infection, which brought on a loss of speech. And his first reading was given as a result of individuals attempting to hypnotize him. And as they hypnotized him, he told the doctors later that he could do this for himself. And so, under the direction of a physician in Hopkins Hill, Kentucky, he gave the first reading, giving diagnosis and suggestions for relieving his own throat condition. The result was that the doctor began to try these readings or this hypnotic state of diagnosis on other people. And he would bring his patients into the room, and Edgar Cayce would take off his collar and tie and lie on a couch and drop into what looked like a sleep. And they would give him a suggestion and say, you have before you this man who's sitting here, and you tell him what's wrong with him and what should be done for him. And he would give an analysis of that condition. He had no knowledge or background in medicine at all, and yet he was able to give this. So in 1910, a Boston Clinical Research Society had a report presented to it on the diagnosis that Edgar Cayce had been given for this doctor over a period of some time. And the New York Times picked this up, and in 1910 we find these enormous headlines, illiterate farmer boy becomes healer when asleep. And that poor then into Hopkinsville, Kentucky, Akron, veritable stream of people suffering from everything under the sun who saw reading. The basis of something that applied a law, a fundamental law in many instances, we think, to the individual problem. So it's the correlation of that material that we're pulling together. But we do have, on our cards marked prophecy, a good many notations. The numbers, all of the readings now have been, the names have been removed from them. They have a number on them, and they're being handled impartially, and they're indexed by number. And we find that if you came down to Virginia Beach and you went into the library, you would find there a large card file with thousands and thousands of cards. The girls who are working on this, Gladys Davis particularly, who has been working with the stenographer who took most of the readings, is working there now and has indexed about 9,000 of these readings. She's got several thousand to go. But the prophecy card, and there are thousands of cards, but the prophecy cards are quite full. And it's about those. They relate to the area of what we might call, Dr. Ryan would call, precognition. Now, many of you have had experiences of prophecy. The prophecy hasn't moved much in time. Maybe it was just a day or so ahead of you, or maybe it was just the death of your aunt Nellie, or your mother, or your brother, or your father, or someone close to you. Prophecy runs around in dreams, in foretelling, in preparing us sometimes for the things that are coming. It builds us up. It prepares us emotionally and mentally to face certain situations. It warns us, too. And it seems to take into concern or consideration the possibility of this choice that Tom was talking about, the ability to decide between good and evil and to move in the positive direction. Now, if we were to examine these prophecies, we might find, and I think I remember, that on one of these cards right near the top there is a number, and that number refers to a statement that was made in the readings early, way back in Dayton, Ohio, when some of the first life readings were given and the first mention was made of Atlantis, which is not prophecy but history. But in this reading, a very interesting statement was made, a statement that I have seen within the last few days in an editorial in a Los Angeles newspaper. I read it. I used it as a point in a lecture that I gave out there. This editorial announced that the president of Caltech had just stated that he had agreed with Dr. Conant that the future real development of power for man was not coming through the atomic bomb or the atomic power, but was coming through solar energy, power from the sun. Now, the readings have indicated way back in Dayton, Ohio, back in 1924, 25, 26, along in that, there is a statement which we having those records, stating this exact point that the Atlanteans had these enormous crystals, that we were going to be able to discover them again and know how to break down the sunlight, and that it was going to be used and would become the great source of man's power, that it wasn't the atomic power that we were to look for progressive activity and development for man, but that solar power would gradually come to the front and come to the top as the great source of power. An interesting statement. That's the kind of thing that runs toward prophecy. Well, maybe it was running toward telepathy. Maybe somebody had that thought and he just picked it up along the way. It would be hard to divide at any point where prophecy starts, where clairvoyance and telepathy leave off. They get awfully mixed up at times. Now, let's take a look at some different kinds of prophecies that he gave. Would you consider this to be a prophecy? A reading was given for a boy in a southern state at 11 years old. Now, this boy was given what was called then a life reading, a vocational reading. His family were concerned about his vocation, and it indicated very clearly in this reading the specific vocation that he was to, that where he would be successful. It didn't say he would, but that he could. So we can consider this phase of prophecy, though the boy did later get into the vocation that was indicated in his life reading after trying for a number of years something else, and he has made a tremendous success in this vocation that was suggested for him. But let's not say that that's prophecy because it gave him a choice. But it made another statement in that same reading, which is a rather peculiar one. It said that this boy would later develop an allergy for certain types of food, which would both cause him a great deal of difficulty and would also, in a strange way, be of great benefit to him. Now, this bit of clairvoyance, if you want to call it, he didn't have any allergy. He could eat anything at 11 years old. But later on, we find that this boy was drafted for the army and disqualified and made a 4F because he had an allergy for certain types of food. Well, maybe he was just seeing something, or maybe he was prophesying there in relation to the development of the life of this individual. It's very interesting. It's caused him a lot of trouble, but it certainly got him out of the army. Now, I wonder, I have never discussed this particular point with Tom, but we probably will before we fly much further along the way. We'll get into a discussion of how much prophecy and how much clairvoyance lies in a statement of that kind. Now, let's move, though, to some of these prophecies that he really promised you so blithely that I would give you. Some of his statements that concern you and concern me in times like these. Educator gave that question and some of these questions Tom Shabu asked. Many other people who were curious about what was coming. He asked a lot of questions on this subject. Now, Casey was not a prophet. Remember that this was not the focus of his work. A breadth and vast number of his readings were individual. I would say certainly up to 90% of them were individual. And yet in these individual readings, general questions were asked. And there were questions, two or three readings, as I remember correctly, on the Great Pyramids. And the prophecies there, and we'd be interested in those, we published some of that material. And he indicated that there was no question that this pyramid was built by people who knew what they were doing. And that it was built into it through their great knowledge of astrology, of astronomy, a foretelling, a picture of events, particularly as it related to the coming of the Messiah, or the coming of Jesus, the coming of Christ. There was quite a bit of that, and it was tied in later with readings that were given on the life of Jesus about that period when before he began his ministry, indicating that he finished up before he moved into Palestine to undertake that 3 years of service at 30. He finished up his work in Egypt and took an initiation ceremony with John the Baptist in this great pyramid. But it had been built really to, in a part, to tell the coming, to tell about his coming and the importance of the period that man was entering into at that time. And the reading seemed to indicate that a great deal, confirming this statement, that a great deal of the biblical prophecies are tied up there in this great monument of stone. You'd be interested in seeing some of those readings. You can get them through our publication leaflet, or you can get them by coming and reading them at Virginia Beach. And I'll kind of hold them back, hoping that some of you will come down there and take a look at them. Now, let's move on. There were prophecies too, statements about the coming world changes. We are on top of it. And as Tom said about the great prophecies, about the prophecies in regard to the Pope, and the prophecies of Notre Dame, and the prophecies of the Bible, we can either throw them all out the window, or we can face them now within the next few years, and they're going to begin to work with us, work out. There is indication, for example, that very soon now, after 53, we're going to discover a new process, according to the readings, for adapting electricity to the telescope.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Casey. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Hugh Lynn Casey.
We're going to discover a new process, according to the readings, for adapting electricity to the telescope. We've done something in the direction of the microscope, but it yet hasn't been applied, as it will be applied, in the use with the telescope. And that we're going to suddenly know a great deal more about our place in the universe. Now, they are coming too. He made a statement many, many years ago in a physical reading way back in 1920 that there would come a time when man would be able to diagnose, to take a sample of blood and from that blood diagnose the entire ailments and problems and difficulties of the human body and identify that blood after a long period of time. Many of you know, if you followed medical research, of the tremendous advances that have been made only recently in this matter of blood analysis. These are general statements tending toward things that are coming about. We are looking for and working with in our medical research at this very moment some of the material that we believe almost as a prophecy that can come about a system of treatment for that will relieve and cure about a third of the epilepsy cases that exist in America, and there are some 750,000 of such cases. Now, there are other things interested in these bits of medical prophecy, so to call it. We indicated that something's going to be done with the ordinary, simple old blueberry that will later make medical history. I don't know who's going to do it or when it's going to be done. I wish I knew enough about medicine to get into that and dig at it a bit. But it's coming. Now, he made these statements also about the Jerusalem artichoke. And any of you who know something about the problem of insulin and relating it to diabetes and the development with the Jerusalem artichoke that's come within the past few years, realize how accurate this kind of statement can be. Now, let's move, though, to the more difficult type of prophecy that has to do with changes. He indicated that beginning in 1953, this is 52, in 1953 and moving slowly toward a crescendo in 1958, and then more violently from 1958 onward, world changes in their circuit that would probably slow down even our interest in war. This may be the great breaks that will come that will make possible a length of time for peace between now and the biblical prophecies of the ending up around the 2000 when things are going to really sort of blow off. These changes have to do with raising a movement of land in the Pacific. Well, that's simple because that's been going on all the time, but great movements of land that are going to begin to move there, large areas of it. This is your Lemuria beginning to move around again. And movement also of land in the Atlantic. Now, that's a little something different. The Atlantic's pretty deep out there, and yet it is moving. There's indications of that from the soundings that are being taken constantly. There's quite a record of that if you want to dig into it. But the land is coming up in the Atlantic Ocean, off the coast, there on the Atlantic coast. That we're going to begin to get a movement of land there, and that this movement will cause depressions in other land areas now existent. For example, the northern coast of our continent along the northeastern seaboard. Also, movement along the western coast that's been prophesied constantly for practically every other day, every morning. We're expecting something to happen to the lower part of California and along through Los Angeles. They're still not running yet out there. Even our friends are not getting too serious until after 53 about it, or more toward 58 perhaps. But movements of land, destructive activity there. And also movements in the central portion of America. These are very calmly stated, as simply as he would state all of these other things. Now, this would be a movement, a tilting, a movement of the Gulf upward and the Great Lakes downward, a tilting. That part of the country, of course, has been underwater before. You know that, of course. If you go through or live in or have ever been in the state of Kentucky, you know there wouldn't take much shaking to shake a lot of things loose down there. I was born right near the mouth of Mammoth Cave, and the place is cut and under, just run through with caves, limestone caves of all kinds. The whole place is undercut with it. Well, do you remember, any of you remember the fantastic headlines that appeared one morning in Tennessee papers, the night Wilford Lake appeared overnight? It was suddenly a great big lake running through part of Tennessee and Kentucky there. An enormous, quite a freshwater thing, an enormous lake. It suddenly boiled and was there. Came up, filled out and covered a whole large area there of land. And it happened all in one night. These things are going to begin to multiply, begin to change, and we're going to have some real shakings and real movement of land areas all over the world. If the readings are to be accepted, you will expect some activity, very serious activity in the Japanese, on the Japanese islands. You would also expect some in the southern portion of Europe and in also the northern portion of Europe. Perhaps a change, a violent change, in the Gulf Stream, which would affect the northern coast of all of the north part of England and the French coast and so forth. But also activity, particularly in the Mediterranean area around Italy, with a considerable activity through that area. Now, all of these are common volcanic areas. They have to do with the earthquake belts, as you know, the great faults that are running up and down the continental areas, and where great land movements have taken place, apparently before. So this may be just wild guessing, but back that guessing up will be 15,000 readings where so many of them have worked out and have been so accurate, and it begins something to take a look at. When you can begin to test information of this kind, such as Eddie Casey has given, when you can begin to take it and measure it, check the accuracy of it, and then take the suggested experiments and repeat them so that what you suggest can be used and worked out for others, you begin to get into a very practical kind of research, which we are very much interested in our activity through the Association for Research and Enlightenment, where we are examining and studying and making these records available on a research basis to all kinds of people everywhere who are interested in them. That has been the purpose of our trip across the country to our conferences in Los Angeles and San Francisco and in Dallas and Chicago and Milwaukee and so forth. We have there a mass of material at Virginia Beach. Over 15,000 individual readings, each one supported by letters and documents of all kinds, each one having to do with particular individual case histories where many of them have worked out and been extremely helpful and where general questions have been asked. These suggest research projects. They suggest systems of treatment and ways of developing psychic perception and information on the nature of psychic laws. And they suggest theories of psychology that are quite beyond and out in front, new frontiers in thinking, really. And they suggest ideas about how to develop such things as healing power, ideas about meditation, ideas that relate the psychic experience to the religious experience and the nature of man. And so we have people like you coming from many directions, doctors and medical students seeking to study the research material as it has to do with the physical body and the improvement of diagnostic techniques and systems of treatment. And we have people who are from the occult and metaphysical groups who have studied and have a lot of the theory and knowledge of these laws and want to see the practical examples in the way it's been worked out in human lives. And we have a great many other people who are concerned about the religious life that they're experiencing. They're having religious experiences themselves, and they'd like to know what they're all about, some of them. And they begin to seek in these fields that explain to some extent the kind of experiences that they're having. And we have other people who are coming from the parapsychological groups, where they're studying and examining the nature of psychic perception and psychic power and what to begin with it, how it can be developed and whether it should be developed. There's a great deal of valuable information there on these subjects. Laboratory experiments, projects are being carried on there at Virginia Beach. Conferences are being run in the summer. There are many of these people here. In fact, I think the real enthusiasm of your Toledo study group that is studying the work of Eddie Casey here in Toledo arose from the fact that so many of them have been down to these congresses and watched these things. They've helped make some of the horoscopes that or the type of horoscope that was suggested, where you can see auras with it. And it worked with the lapis stones and watched people's psychic perception rise in an experimental laboratory setup. Yes, and people, too, who are beginning on a psychological level, a deeper psychological level, to understand and want to find out a little bit more about themselves and prepare themselves to better face these times in which we're living.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Casey on Reflections. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Hugh Lynn Casey.
These times in which we're living, there are strenuous times in anybody's language, the language of the old prophet or the language of the modern mystic, in the language of the scientist or the language of the religious leader. If you've heard Billy Graham recently, you know what he's saying about the coming world changes. And if you've heard some of the scientists, you know what they're saying. And if you've listened or read any of these old prophecies that you've heard Tom Shabu tonight, you know what they're saying. And then just a little few grains, I've given you something of what Casey has said about this, too. But it all adds up. It all adds up to a very important point that relates to you and to me. It adds up to the fact that you're brave enough to come out tonight to a meeting like this, that is discussing things on the frontier as a man's thinking, that you're not scared to be seen now. A few years ago, if you could have gotten together a half a dozen people who had shown their faces and said that they were going to discuss prophecy or psychic subjects, it would have been difficult. But today, people are beginning to realize that perhaps the responsibility for this whole mess rests not with Harry Truman and not with the Russians, but it rests inside each individual mind and heart. And if it is to be straightened out, that you and I have got to begin to do the straightening inside first, that our little world can be changed, and that you and I can meet with courage and faith and understanding and with knowledge, knowledge of spiritual law, this new age into which we are moving. That's the purpose of a research program. That's the purpose of meetings, really, like this, is to stir and challenge some of you, that you will study and work a little harder, move some of those prejudices out of the way just a little bit, and begin to seek and begin to face your personal responsibility in this time of great change and great upheaval in the hearts and the mind and the souls of men. It's not too late for us to do something about this. It is not too late to choose good. And that choice will not be made by somebody else for you. It will be made by you. And the part you play in this program will be related to this choice that you have made in the secret of your own mind and heart. That's why we're excited about this research program, why we want to give a little bit of this material that may challenge and stimulate and move you, and why we hope that you will take part in further study and research, that you visit Virginia Beach and study some of these publications and material, that you will begin to join with all of these movements that are looking toward these new horizons. Because we are in a time that will test men's souls. When you and I will need all the understanding and faith and power which we can gather to help those about us day by day.
And now it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. Kimberly Rose is the host of the radio show Interviews with Kimberly Rose on CBS Sky Radio on Thursdays from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. She'll also be speaking at the upcoming conference, Be Your Own Psychic. It's the Edgar Cayce Legacy, from October 19th to the 23rd at the ARE in Virginia Beach. To find out more, go to edgarcayce.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. Well, hello.
Hi.
And what's today's thought for the day?
Today's thought for the day is 272-9. He hath not willed. He hath not destined that any soul should perish. Impatience, impersistency, inconsistency of thy manifestations of his love before and to and of thy fellow man. Ye become aware that thy soul is a portion of the Creator. That is the gift of the Father to thee. This is manifested in thine daily experience, and this is so important. This is something that I know that when I went through my near-death experience, I left my physical body, but I did not leave anyone around me. I felt everyone. I felt my family. I did feel that presence of God, of consciousness, this loving, loving consciousness. I didn't walk down a tunnel. And that's not to say some people don't. But I think that because of my consciousness and the awareness that I live in my life of the oneness, that we really are all one and God is within us. And this physical body is the really, truly the only thing that separates us, and it doesn't really separate us. It's just our vehicle on this earth to remember that we are all part of our Creator. That was such a big thing for me when I went through that near-death experience, because I remember coming back and I remember asking Daniel Brinkley about that. I said, well, why didn't I get to go through that, you know, going down this tunnel and, you know, seeing all these things? And he said, that's because you already on this earth plane, you are already knowing that in every experience that you live, you're already living that experience in the moment and already feeling that connection. So you automatically come to awareness. It's quick. And I said, well, why do some people do that and why don't? And he said, it doesn't make one, or another any better. He said that, you know, whether it be past lifetimes or different things, you just know that part of God is within you. And because of that, your actions and your deeds become more godlike. And that's the gift that God gives to us because if we just let love flow, and I love that song, we just let it flow from our hearts. That's the gift that we can live in this peace and love. It's not that difficult.
This says, he hath not destined any soul should perish, which some people might think, I'll, live hard and please myself and then I'll be gone. And that's fine. You know, but no, your soul is going to continue going on, whether you like it or not. And what you do right now is really going to affect you later. Well, thanks for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. To find out more about Hugh Lynn Casey, go to edgarcasey.org. Thanks to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day. And most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey.